My name is Ray O'Keefe. I'm an alcoholic. We were talking the last 3 weeks about the first three steps of the program. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for the second time in 1965, I was so afraid and so terror-ridden and so concerned that I would go back to drinking that I really stayed here for the first period of time from fear of drinking. And after I had not had anything to drink for some period of time, perhaps 3 months, only then was I able to look back and say, yes, you know, I was powerless over alcohol. I really was. I thought, when I had alcohol, I thought I had power over it. I knew what to do with it. You drink it. And I only turned down, somebody offered me a drink, I've only turned that down once. I completely misunderstood the question. I knew what to do with whiskey. I could drink it any way you wanted to. I could drink under the bridge with you. I could drink Muscatel. I could drink martinis at 21, anything way you wanted to drink. And I didn't care what I drank. Anything they gave me was all right with me. And I drank from the time I got up in the morning till the time I passed out at night. And, of course, you can only do that so long. And I ran out. I ran out of everything. I ran out of power. I ran out of friends. I ran out of family. I ran out of a job. I just ran out. And I don't know where everything went. I mean, one time I had it. It was right there. I was doing good. I would have told you I was doing good if you asked me. I would have told you I was doing good even if you did ask me. But it went away. It just, one day I was there and it sort of just slipped away one time. The job went. Everything else just was gone. And I was wandering around and I didn't know what to do. I had been here. This didn't work for me. It worked for other people, but it didn't work for me. And when I came back, I was dragged back, really. I asked to come back. I called my sponsor. I asked him to. If I could be like he was, if I could be successful, and put his hand on me. And he said, you don't have to live that way. I was amazed. I thought you did. I really did. To me, you know, alcohol is just a great stuff. Just what was just read, cunning, baffling, powerful. I can remember waking up in the morning in a state of terror because I was supposed to be in three different courts at three different times, and I knew I wasn't going to be in any of them. And I was 6 months behind on everything, all of the bills, all of the mortgages, everything like that. The house was in a shambles. The car was barely drivable. And I was terror-stricken. I woke up, oh, this is another day of this. And then somehow or other I would get myself to a place where I could have about five doubles. And things began to solve themselves. I could handle those three court dates and not show up in any of them. I'd just get on the phone and this is not a big deal. That mortgage will be all straightened out. That bank doesn't want my house. Screw her and her bitch, and I ain't going back there. And the chemical, as soon as it got into me, it solved all these little problems that I had. And thus began another wonderful and eventful day. And I had solved everything in an hour. And I don't know what the hell I was worried about. What was I worried about it? At 8 o'clock. Here it is, 10:30, and I'm on top of my heap here. The world is now my oyster. And I'm thinking of calling up someone. Merging a company or something. Perhaps a vacation in Europe would be appropriate at this time. You know? Let me just write this check. Let me just put this leaper right through the bank. And you can only do it so long. And then I got here. And then I could see. When I didn't have the booze, when I wasn't filled with that chemical, when my brain wasn't fried, then I could see, oh boy, I was powerless. I didn't have it. I didn't have it. But I stayed here. I wasn't well motivated. I stayed here because I couldn't go anywhere else. I understood my life was unmanageable. I couldn't manage anymore. It was just all over for me. That's the kind of guy I was, and I'm fairly representative of what comes here. Someone with a powerless life, an unmanageable life. I'm not only powerless over alcohol, I'm just powerless. I'm a man without power. It's another thing, too. And then as I stayed here, I began to see that I didn't drink anymore. One day I told you that wonderful thought came to me. I really didn't want to drink anymore. God, that was something. I didn't want to drink. Bars were still open. And by this time, I was sort of back in funds. One thing about being a lawyer is if you seldom starve. I could have gotten some. I could have faked it for a little while some more. I could have gone back there. But then I would think about the terror. And I knew I just couldn't do it. Plus, I had this sponsor who was at my shoulder all the time. All the time. And I realized I didn't really want to go back to drink. I didn't want to go back. It was possible that I could go back. But I really didn't want to. Drinking became sort of a non-event with me. You know, it just didn't register. I didn't want to drink. I wondered what did that for me. I knew he was awful strong, this sponsor of mine, but I didn't think he could do it. I knew he had a part in it. And then there were the people in that group that I went to at that time. Nice guys. Nice fellows. I had a mailman I used to drive around and with, and a fellow that drove a Schaefer beer truck, and we'd go around. And I would remind them every once in a while. They were very nice fellows, even though they weren't college graduates. And they would tell me if I was so goddamn smart, how come I was so goddamn drunk for all those years? I understood that they were sober. I understood that I was sober. I saw people come in after I did. I was getting to be senior, you know. I had about 6 months. I was ready to take over. And I was watching the newcomers. You're new, eh? Sit down. You'll be all right. You know, 6 months, that's when you really start to get things in order there. Sit down over there. I have a few. Let me tell you my opinion. Thank God for my sponsor. He'd say, tell him your name, tell him your group, and sit down. That's all you know. But it made an impression on me. These other people were getting sober. I was getting sober. Everybody was getting sober. That kept coming to these meetings. I was there every night. I'm still here every night. That's power. My life, that's power. And I figured that was good. Whatever that was doing something for me that I really needed to be done. It was keeping me here. It was making me enjoy being here. I wasn't drinking. I liked that. And I believed it. I didn't believe it because someone told me about it. I didn't believe it even because I read it in the book. I believed it because I experienced it. This was part of me now. It was part of my life. And so I came to where we were talking about last week. I made up my mind because he asked me. Make up your mind, he said. You stay here, you go back where you came from. Well, that was impossible. I could not go back where I came from. Make a decision, he said. You're going to go, you're going to stay. That's how simple it was. You know, none of these steps are giant steps. They're not mountains. They're not even molehills. They're just steps. They're just steps. Much easier to come up than the flight of stairs outside to get up here. There's only 12 of these. Little steps, not a big deal. Made a decision. I want to stay here. He said, it's time for you to come to terms with God. Because you're going to need him. You're going to need him very soon. Besides that, he had me praying every morning and every night, which was brand new for me. He started me off that way. Come to terms with this idea of a power greater than your own. You know, they weren't kidding me in the second strip. That power is capitalized. I'm an educated person. I know what that means. I knew who they were talking about. I just didn't want to get involved in it right away. He said, come to terms with this idea. It didn't require that I join a religious order. I didn't have to buy a turban. I didn't have to start eating walnuts and wearing funny robes. Or get a tattoo. Or beat the goddamn drum. I just had to make up my mind what I thought about when I was confronted with the word God. What did it mean to me? It was not, and I say to you, it is not the God of your father or your mother or your teachers or your schools or your traditions. And those things are wonderful, and a lot of people enjoy them and go back to them. But this is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about God as you understand him, or God as we understand him. That's different. And that can be anything you want. First thing he said to me is, just make up your mind, it's not you. I said, I know it's not me. He said, I'm not sure that you know that. So I tell you, I just came to this idea of the first two words of the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. Your Father, my Father. And I never had a father, but I am a father. Seven times I'm a father. And I think I understand now from experience how you do that, how to be one. I don't claim to be a very good one, but I have a lot of experience with it. And I understand how it works, I think. And my idea of God as I understand him is our Father. He's not only my Father, he's your Father, he's all of our fathers. And like all fathers, he wishes us well, but he wants us to do this under his care. See, the third step doesn't require anybody to turn anything over to anybody for any purpose. It drives me sometimes, I think I'm hearing something weird. I turn over my wife on Tuesday, I took her back on Thursday. I have to go buy a suit now, God wants me to buy a suit. He wants me to buy a blue one, you know. What would God do with my life? What the hell's God want? O'Keefe is giving you his life. Oh, wonderful. Nice. Yeah. Is he finished with it? I gave it to him. He's giving it back to me. Now, God doesn't want your life. He's got other things to do. You have your life. It's your life. You live it from the beginning to the end. He wants to take care of it as our Father. That's the role he plays in our lives. He has a care for us, and the step says that. He doesn't want your will. He doesn't want you to be some kind of a robot. He gave it to you. You're free to make mistakes. He wants to have a care for you. He hopes you make the right decision. And in my case, he gave me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous so that I will make the right decision, and I have made the right decision for a long time. Because I've been living for more than 20 years under the care of the God of my understanding. And as it says in the book, I have a new manager. I am his agent. I have a new employer. I am his servant. It's worked wonderfully well for me. And those first three steps are really the equivalent of emergency room treatment. They're not big steps. It's emergency room. When I came into this fellowship, I was dying. Physically, mentally, and spiritually. I was dying. There was an emergency. And that's what the three steps do. They stop you from dying. They serve the same function as a emergency room in a hospital. You know, when you go to the emergency room in a hospital, the idea there is not to diagnose and treat your illness. The idea there is to stabilize you so that you don't die. So they bring in the accident victim or something, shot victim. Stabilize him. Get his pressure right. Get his fluids right. Get his temperature right. Make sure he's breathing. Make sure he continues to breathe. Emergency, emergency. Then they take you up to the sixth floor. They kill you at leisure. Because when you go up to the sixth floor, then they start diagnosing you. Oh, I wonder what caused that. You know, then they bring in, and then they call, they find out, oh, I see the cause of that. Well, here's the treatment. We'll cure them now. The treatment is upstairs. Emergency room is just to get you stable so you don't drop dead right in front of them. Make them look bad. And that's what 1, 2, and 3 are. Stop the drinking. It's not the drinking, it's my wife. Bullshit. Stop the drinking. It's the job, horseshit. It's the drinking. Get your attention, see? You're powerless, idiot. No, it's not the drinking. It's them, it's they, it's her. Horseshit. It's you, Bunky. Nobody did it but you. Nobody ever had a gun in my head, boy. You did it, Bunky. Not your mother, not your father. Don't waste a lot of time. You're an adult child of an alcoholic. You're a victim. Horse shit. Have I said that before? Yeah. It's you. You're the one that did it. And if you don't do something about it, you'll do it again. That's the sad part of it all. And that's what they recognize. See, when you come in the first time, as I did, and you've experienced this, you get a free ride. That's free, pal. You walk in here and something clicks, and you've heard it and seen it over and over again. That spiritual power pours into you as a gift, a free ride. And you notice how it works? They quiet down, those pigeons. I'm very bad with newcomers. You know? They make me very nervous. They come in here. I just can't stand all that hate and all that anger that's coming out and all that self-pity that's flying out of them, and they're yelling. They always talk too loud. They sit down. I can't. The wife, the job, the money, the car, Jesus, take it easy now. We say easy, does it? No, this is important. The wife, the job, the money. Say, sit down. No, listen to this. Oh, what a day I had. Let me tell you, it's like a course on driver's ed. I'm going down 95. The guy cuts, Say, take it, Jesus. Take it easy. Quiet down. And they do. I mean, most of us that come here, the general rule is we quiet down the pigeons. It's nice to watch. They get sensible. They stop drinking. That's the key. They stop. Because we get their attention. We say, it's the drinking. Don't talk to me about anything else. Just drinking. Stop it. Yeah, but I stopped drinking. And they do. You did. I did. A lot of us did. 2 million of us have stopped. Marvelous thing. And then the process begins. The process. After a few months, guy's civilized. You can talk to him. He's not ranting and raving. He's not yelling. He's not bothering you with some crap about his wife and his house. Maybe he's doing a little work around here, a little coffee, picking up a chair or two. He's becoming part of this thing. It's beginning to work. It's a great thing. You've all seen it. It's marvelous to watch it. He's becoming one of us. He's becoming part of the we, just like we want him to. And then all of a sudden, after that free ride, see, that's all free. It begins to dip. And this is when he's not drinking now. This is when he's not drinking. It begins to change. The book tells us that when an alcoholic doesn't drink, Dr. Silkworth says, he is vaguely irritable and discontent. Irritable and discontent. That's what Dr. Silkworth says. And pretty soon you notice it. You listen for it. I do. The same guy who's quieted down now and everything, all of a sudden he'll say very funny things. He begins to talk in code. And this code is known only to him. Except I figured it out so many years ago. He says very funny things. He says, like, you can never get a parking space at that meeting. Now, wouldn't you think they'd have parking for us? I mean, we're there. We support that church. We should have parking. Code. I'm going to drink now. There's an awful lot of smoke in that room. Holy Jesus, smoke would drive you crazy. My eyes hurt. This is a guy that spent till 5 in the morning in some dump where you couldn't even see the wall. And the guy next to him is spitting on his shoe. And all of a sudden he says, I gotta have air, Code. They don't say they're going to go out and drink. Nobody says that. I'm going out and get drunk now. That's very rare you hear that. But they're vaguely irritable and discontent. See, they're not drinking, but that's all. They just stopped drinking. And they say, that speaker last night, that O'Keefe, listen to that fat bastard. I heard him a month ago. He said the same thing then, he's saying now. Then they say, I said this to my sponsor one night. I said, John, it's those meetings, they say the same thing over and over and over. Yeah, he said, that's right. That's when he began to know I was talking code. Code, it's all code. What it means is he's coming down off that free spiritual ride. And it's time, as the book says, to get down to causes and conditions. And as the fourth step says, to make a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That's what the step is, and that's what I'm talking to you about tonight. Down to causes and conditions. Searching, fearless, moral inventory of ourselves. Nobody else. Not her, not them, not they, not the boss. You did it, Sydney. You did it. Look at it. poor newcomers come in now, they're all very sanitized. They've been to Floating Hills or Apple View or someplace for 10 grand. And they got fed a lot of crap. And they spent a lot of the money or insurance or something, and they came floating in here. And they got a suitcase with them. And I say, can you help me with this? And they open it up. It's their biography. Can you think of anything worse to let an egomaniac do than write his own biography? The first 20 chapters are on Mommy and Daddy. And about chapter 36, they're finishing up the 8th grade. And they're figuring out that nobody likes them. As I had mentioned before, these steps are not written in Albanian. They are in the English language. Make a searching and fearless inventory. A biography is not an inventory. Dr. Bob was a physician, so we can assume he knew something of school and had learned the English language. Bill graduated law school, so we're certain about him. They knew what a biography was. It's not such a big word. It's probably no bigger than inventory. If they wanted us to write a biography, an autobiography, they would have said that, made a searching and fearless biography. That's not the problem. They want you to do an inventory to see what's the matter with you now. If you have a store and you go to take the inventory, you don't take the inventory of the store when you opened it up 30 years ago, because it'll do you no good. It's what's on the shelf now. What do you got now? There is something in you and in me called a character defect, which is triggering off this feeling of irritableness and discontent. And if you have this disease, that feeling of irritableness and discontent will only go away if you drink or substitute something for it. The 12 and 12 tells us in no uncertain terms that our defects of character were the primary cause of our drinking. And that is a quotation. Our defects of character were the primary cause of our drinking and of our failure at life. Alcohol does not cause alcoholism. You like that? That is true. Alcohol does not cause alcoholism. Alcohol is simply the primary symptom of the disease of alcoholism. Alcoholism, our book tells us, and I believe, is caused by defects of character. In the 12 and 12 on the chapter on the ninth step, it says that our defects of the character were the cause of all of our woes, including our alcoholism. It's those defects. I have within me the seeds of my own destruction. Defects of character. What is wrong with me? That's what's wrong with me. Moral inventory, right and wrong. What's wrong with you? What is it that's triggering off this terrible need that you have to kill yourself? And they give us very simple illustrations in the big book. They give us, right after what was read tonight, they give us a form of a hit list, a grudge list. Remember Mr. Jones? Wonderful fellow, Mr. Jones. He told my wife about my girlfriend. He's trying to get my job. An all-around, all-American kind of a guy, Jones. And the book says, if I'm mad at Jones, there's something the matter with me. A difficult concept. The character defects that are mentioned in the 12 and 12 are, of course, the seven capital sins, or the seven most common failings of mankind. It's a marvelous thing to think that we've been on this planet millions of years, and there are only seven major things that we all specialize in. In my case, I did an inventory. I wrote the inventory because he told me. And I dug in at the beginning. Don't think that I did this, you know, willy-nilly and volunteered for it and all the rest of it. Most people don't like to do this. Of course they don't like to do it. This is the medicine, Bernie. This is the medicine. You know, we go to a doctor, and he diagnoses us, and he gives us a bottle of some noxious green crap, And he says, drink this three times a day. Certainly. Yeah, we drink it. We drink it three times a day. What a doctor says here, stick this thing up your ass. It'll make you feel good. You say, how far, doc? Wham, you know? Because it's going to help you. Nobody ever had medicine isn't fun. I never had any medicine that tasted any good. But it's going to do the job. It's going to cure us. And that's what this is. See, we say to the alcoholic, write down here a moral inventory. Half of AA is currently working on the fourth step. I'm working on that. You know, you got a fourth step. I'm working on that. And the other half is on their 16th one. Oh, I did one a year ago, and I'm going to do one next year. And then the following week, I'm going to do two more. And I have a closet full at home. And it's like, it's like you can't read the English language. Read the English language. Make a searching and fearless moral inventory, singular, one. Just do it, Herman. Do it. Nothing about working on it or circling around it. And I think you should do it as fast as possible. In and out. Why wallow around in that crap? You got a 10-step coming up down the road that's going to take care of the rest of it. And you have a sponsor. The sponsor will, in the fifth step, show you how that inventory. If you made a mistake, your sponsor's going to tell you about it. See, people at fourth step meetings, first of all, they're waffling around. They don't want to do it. That's it. I'm working on it. That's crap. They're not working on anything. They come back the next week, I'm still working on it. They go to another meeting, I'm working on that. They're not working on anything. You like to follow them home and say, "Where? Show me your work product." Shy, full of shit is what they are. And here's the problem. It's not a fourth step problem. That's not a fourth step problem. They're not doing a fourth step, but that's not the problem. You know why they're not doing a fourth step? Because they have not made a decision to turn over their will and their life to the care of God as they understand him. And you know why they haven't made a decision to turn over their life and their will to the care of God as they understand him? Because they have not come to believe that there is a power greater than their own. And you know why they haven't come to believe in a power greater than their own? That's because they're not powerless over alcohol. So where does that leave them? It leaves them drunk. Absolutely. This is the step that you take it or you drink. It's that simple. And if you drink, the book says you surely die. Not you maybe die, or you probably will die. Surely you will die. And this is what we're talking about, because if you go backwards like that, and they come out that they're not powerless over alcohol, they have not yet admitted that, you know they're going to drink. Because they are discontent. They're irritable. Statistically, alcoholic suicides are by alcoholics who are not drinking. They can't take it without the booze. If I had to live another day with that terror, I don't know what I would have done. I think if I had come here a day earlier, I might not have stayed. And I also think sometimes if I had come a day later, it would have been too late. And this is where the healing begins, right here. See, we've straightened you out now. We've straightened you out. You don't drink. You've admitted the problem. The problem is you can't drink anymore. That's it. It's not her. It's not the job. It's not them. It's not they. It's not the tickets. It's not the lack of money. It's the lack of power. And you've done that, so you're not drinking. And you believe maybe something's going to help you here. You're going to stick around. This is all right. This is nice. You like the fellowship. Practically everybody likes that when they come here. I love it. I like AA meetings. Great fellowship. You're great story. Very high grade of bullshit. It's wonderful. And you get all kinds of, you know, it's chit-chat. I like it. I like to hang out with AA guys and AA people. I think it's fun. I like that. Obviously, I like it. I do it so much. And they like that, the newcomer. That's fine. And then they go to even get a little spiritual in the third step. You know, they get a little spiritual. They get on intimate terms with God as they understand him. They begin to call St. Francis of Assisi Frank. You know, and they get a little mystical at that point. You know, some of them get very mystical. They become Hindus or something, and they go on retreats, and it's wonderful. They walk around smiling. You know, they don't have any evil thoughts, and they got lust under control. Just live to be my age. When you get lust under control, But it only lasts so long. See? It only lasts so long. You've got to get down to the causes and the conditions. Not an easy thing to write down on a piece of paper. Face up to the problem. You're the problem. Not your mother, not your father, not your doctor, not your school, not your church. You did it. It's not an easy thing to face up to that. You get someone with an ego like mine, just to entertain the thought that I am somehow defective, it's not a happy thought. I got defects. Thank God they didn't recall me. I have shortcomings. I don't measure up a lot. But that's what a sponsor is for. That was my sponsor was for, to put your face right in it. You get down there and look at what you did. Write it down. Get it on a piece of paper so you can't deny it. This is not what she thinks you are, because we know what she thinks you are. This is not what your boss thinks you are. This is what you think you are. And right there is the seed of your alcoholism. That's the cause of it. Right on that piece of paper. Mine surprised me very much. You know, I had this, we all do, I suppose. I had this image of myself. I was sort of a rough, tough, diamond in the rough, very bright, very aggressive young man who had come up from a tough neighborhood and gone through all these schools and that's how I thought of myself. That was not what I saw on that piece of paper. Actually, I was three different guys when I drank. The book says we are very much the actor. And that was me. I was three different people when I drank. Maybe four. I was one guy at home. I was another guy in that saloon. And I was a totally different guy at work. And every once in a while, the wrong guy would pop out. I'd be nice at home. Something totally out of character. Imagine if you were really yourself at a bar when you're in that stage and the bartender says, "How are you feeling?" You say, "I'm terrified." Get out, get out. But for the normal alcohol, you know, the bartender says, "How you doing?" Right? "Well, I'm fine, I'm fine." You know, you're fine, you're dying right in front of him. Then you ask him, "How am I doing?" He says, "You're doing good." "It's wonderful. Here, it's $5. I'm doing good." I would go to Charlie in Janssen's on 44th. I say, "Charlie, was I a little out of line last night? Fill me in." That was one of my expressions. "Fill me in. I know what the hell happened." "No, you were great. Never funny. Ha, ha, ha. Here, it's five. Ha, 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 ha. Have one yourself. That's wonderful. Ha, 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 ha. You're just in time. Give that lady a drink. Here we go." You know. And that's how... But I looked on this piece of paper that I wrote. He wasn't in there, that guy. You know what was on that piece of paper? A frightened, terrified, defect-ridden person. Someone who was filled with pride and anger and envy and greed and gluttony and lust and all the rest of it. And if I could capsulize my inventory, and I think this is also halfway typical, money, power, sex. Money, power, sex. You can dress it up any way you want. You can call it a deep, meaningful, la la la. Money, power, sex. And in my case, I really think that sex and money were just another form of power. I was, and sometimes I am, a power-driven person. I saw on that inventory that this poor, frightened, terrified, sick man had spent a lifetime trying to be a powerhouse. And the terrible thing about it, really is sad in my case, for a period of time, say, the first 30 years of my life, it worked. That was what's so deceptive about it, cunning, baffling, powerful. It worked for 30 years. My self-will, the thing that was killing me at the last 5 years of my drinking, was the thing that had propelled me out of that neighborhood and out of that environment and out of that crazy family and up into wherever I was. But I ran out of power, say. I ran out of self-will. But it was a drive for power. The money that I accumulated when I had some was simply for power. Sex was a form of power play with me. How could I be have a decent relationship with anybody? How could I be a partner to my partners, or a husband to my wife, or a father to my children, when I was so defective? When it was all an exercise in power for me, selfishness, self-centeredness was all on that piece of paper. That man was not somebody I enjoyed. In fact, it was somebody I hardly recognized. And that was the man that drank. This guy drank. The guy on that piece of paper drank up to 3 quarts of vodka a day when he got here. This was the guy that wet the bed and crapped in his pants. This guy. And I did that. I wrote it down. It was me. Searching. I had to go back. I would have preferred to do a little 1, 2, 3, you know. Something along the lines of when I used to lie in confession. You know, I did a couple of these and a couple of those and let me out of here. No good. I wasn't looking for anybody to forgive me. I was trying to find out, because my sponsor told me, you're going to find out where your alcoholism began when you finish this. The 12 and 12 says, when we finish this process, a light will shine upon our lives. I spent a long time. I really didn't know who I was. I certainly didn't know what I was. And I never knew where I belonged. I just never knew where I belonged. I was never happy any place. But I finished this process. It was, I don't know how searching it was. I don't know how fearless it was. I know I suffered fear when I did it. But I did it the best I could. And I did it the way the big book told us, and the way the 12 and 12 tells us. And if you're contemplating doing this, and I urge you to do it, I'm very serious about it. Because this is it, pal. You either go on with this program in this step, or you will drink. It's that simple. And if you drink, you're not going to last very long. I assure you of that. It's like falling off a cliff. I did it. See, I came in 63. I did not have a sponsor. I did not do an inventory, and I got drunk. I lasted 10 months. And when I got drunk that second time, I had walked away from that free gift, from that spiritual power. I turned my back on that, and I fell off a cliff. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me. Not the drinking. I was right back into it, and it was 10 times as bad as it had been in the years before. But I did this, and I looked at that. Even without the fifth step, I read that over, and I read that over, and I said, so that's it. Look at that. I never knew that. I never knew that was how I operated. It was completely contrary to my self-image. And I did it once. And I saw where I was at fault. Never mind her. Never mind them. It wasn't that guy who fired me. It wasn't those judges that were always after me. It was me. Nobody but me. I did it, and I'm the guy that wrote the inventory to see what I could do about it. And a wonderful thing happened to me. I haven't had a drink since I wrote my inventory. I haven't had a drink since that time. And if you're at this stage, get a piece of paper, get a pencil, get the 12 and 12 in the big book, sit down with the guidance of your sponsor. And don't worry about this other stuff that floats around in AA. If you got some kind of a checklist from Burning Tree or Hazelberg on the ocean or something, forget it. It may even help you, who knows, but it's just crap floating around by people who are making money off this disease, and it's worthless. It's hopeless. Just like those places that they run are worthless and hopeless. The only effective therapy for the disease of alcoholism is right here. Right in this room. Nowhere else. And the real cure, not the emergency cure, but the real treatment for this disease begins at this step 4. It is crucial, it is vital, it is extremely necessary that you do it. So it says in the book that some of these steps we balk. We know. When I got here, they knew I was going to dig in at this. That's why he was so firm with me. When I complained a little, he said, well, maybe in your case you don't have to write the inventory. Maybe because of your background you're above all of this. I'll tell you what, he said, why don't you just drink and get it over with? Another time he said, why don't you just buy a gun and shoot yourself with it It'll be faster and save your family a lot of trouble. And then I would say, geez, you know, every day I'm at these meetings, John, every single day. Well, he said, perhaps in view of your background, one a day will be sufficient. When I didn't want to write the inventory, he took me back. He said, have you made a decision to stay here? I said, I told you. He said, did you do it? I said, yeah. Do you believe that there's a power that's going to help you? I said, yeah. He said, are you really powerless? I said, yeah. He said, write it. And because, write it, the 12 and 12 ends and I end this way. If you do this inventory, it is the first tangible evidence. Evidence that you can see and feel and touch. Tangible evidence of your desire to go forward with the program. And that's the fourth step. Thank you.